What is going on, hockey fans? Welcome back to another installment of the Avalanche Warning Podcast, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. As always, I am Bailey Curtis, joined by Gavin Oseguera and Grant Foster for a not very newsworthy week so far. We're, as of recording this on Thursday, not much really going on in the world of hockey. So today we're kind of keeping it a little shorter, I believe. The only thing that has come out that I would maybe consider newsworthy is a list that NHL Network put out discussing the top five defensive teams in the NHL. And that's going to be what we talk about today. We're discussing the NHL blue line, or not the NHL blue line, but Colorado's blue line specifically, heading into this upcoming season, how they stack up against some of these other teams that were listed. First off, though, before we get into this, Gavin, how's your week been so far?
It's been pretty good. Relatively quiet on the Avs side of it. I've just been diving into the fantasy leagues and getting all my stuff ready. Absolutely sleuthing. Two-time back-to-back champion, so nothing to brag about.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
By the way, my little secret for y'all is JT Miller's stock has dropped considerably, so you can get him and Brady Tkachuk on the same team.
Okay.
That's going to be great. If y'all out there, that's my little secret for you. You ain't getting shit else. You a guy that's team is named Bros before Ajos, offer you to trade Matt Duchene for someone that's probably not doing very well on your team, you should take the deal. I'm just being a nice guy.
I love the Bros before Ajos, because I definitely have somebody in my fantasy league with that team name. Oh, that's incredible. Grant, how's it going over in your world?
Well, you know, football, fantasy football season, we're trying to get it underway. I'm going with some controversial names this year. I like hanging with Hernandez, you know, loving that kind of name. Bailey doesn't get it because she's never watched football in her life. But
that's not true.
I'm a big fan of that team name. I got some others that I'm thinking about doing. Amon Drugs, you know, Amonra St. Brown, Amon Drugs. I like that one too. I Chase Brown, you know, so that's another one. That's another fun one that I've seen. But honestly, Gavin's just lucky I'm not in his fantasy hockey league, or else his three-peat would never come to pass.
Oh,
just like maybe some Florida teams we know will not come to pass, as is prophesized.
Hey, yo.
First off, coming from the South, I disdain the notion that I don't watch football.
You don't.
So screw you.
Who won the Super Bowl last year, Bailey?
This is a hockey podcast.
That's all I thought. The Kansas City Eagles, obviously.
Yeah, the Kansas City Eagles.
No, this might be one of the first years in a while that I actually pay like decent attention to football. Somebody I knew in high school, who was a freshman while I was a senior, got drafted in this most recent draft. And so I will be a LA Chargers fan this upcoming season for a single season before I go back to the disappointment that is the Carolina Panthers. But anyway, getting into these rankings. So, as I pull them up or start to pull them up here, NHL Network dropped a list of the top defensive units, according to Thomas Hickey of NHL Network. Falling at number five, I'm going to go from 5 to 1. We can kind of give our thoughts on the list before moving into the Avalanche specifically. Montreal Canadiens hitting at number five here. Number four, we've got the Washington Capitals. Dallas Stars, bit of a touchy subject still for some Avalanche fans, but understandably falling into the number three spot on this list. Number two, and this is where it maybe gets a little controversial for me. I know it gets a little controversial for Grant over here. The Florida Panthers at number two. And then the Avalanche falling at number one. Grant, I already know your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if you want to go in reverse, but build up to it. But
well, don't worry, Gavin.
It's
we'll
gonna be quick.
Sweet. We'll make this short and sweet. We have Samuel Girard and Samuel Malinsky. I think we get carried a little bit. The fact that we do have the best defenseman in the world and Devon Taves. Florida's defense is better. Thank you, Alex. Cheers. And over to you, Gavin.
No, I think you're right. I think Florida's won two cups in back-to-back seasons. And really, you got to look at what their defense is. Like, people like to look at the analytical. I think we've talked about this before a lot. We kind of had a discussion last time about size when it comes to defensemen. And a lot of people like to pretend that size doesn't matter in life, which I'm sorry to break it to you, it does. Especially in the NHL. Like wingers absolutely can be undersized. Like, we've seen it. We talked before. We were like Cole Caulfield, Johnny Gaudreau, rest in peace, Patrick Kane. Like, all these guys that are, like, really good at being, like, good, undersized, play really good offense. But when it comes to centers, you very rarely see that because it's a very physically intensive position. Like, Marco Rossi is, like, the current example that comes to mind. Even though he's short, he's not undersized. He's just kind of a brick. Like, he's, like, almost 200 pounds. And then you look at guys like defensemen and you see that almost no undersized defensemen are incredibly successful in the NHL unless they're incredibly gifted. Like Lane Hutson, biggest example. We're going to get to us foreshadowing for our Montreal segment, so I won't say too much. But yeah, I mean, you see like Sam Girard, the biggest problem he has on the Avs team is like if he had played like he did in his first like real breakout season with the Avs, and I think it was 2020, when he had like 10 points in the playoffs, like that's a guy I would absolutely not mind having on the Avs. Whatever, he's not good defensively, he's good offensively, but we just haven't seen that guy. He disappeared and he got replaced by like a doppelganger or something. It's just unfortunate how that's turned out, but yeah, no, I would say like Florida absolutely has the better defensive pairing. Like they just play simple, good defense, and they're just big physical defensemen who don't get beaten in the corners in their own end and in front of the net and aren't massive liabilities. I think at this point is like as much as I like some of the Avs defensemen, obviously we have the best top pairing in the world, in my opinion. Past that, I think it's kind of like the Homer Simpson, where it's like the front is like really beautiful and the back is like this pinned back, like rolls of like overweight. Yeah.
I agree. Especially when you look at Dallas, even though who was number three and four? Dallas was number three, right?
No. Yes. Dallas was number three.
You know, with Florida, you have that top D pairing of, I think it's Ekblad. I want to say it's Ekblad and Forsling. And then that second D pair of Jones and I can't remember who else is on that second D pair. And then you have Schmid, and I think you have Kulikov on the third D pair. I'm forgetting who's on that right hand side. But then even with the Dallas Stars, I mean their right side is so terrible. But the fact that they have both Thomas Harley and Heiskanen, and they've got some decent prospects on the way that they're not going to play, they're going to lead them into the season this year. That Leon Bischel guy was an absolute nightmare for any Avalanche forward who was underneath like 6 foot.
That was going to be one of the guys that I brought up too. And I will go on, I think, to say potential hot take that Thomas Harley and Leon Bischel were the kind of standouts for me during that Colorado Avalanche Dallas Stars series. Like just with their size solely, the way that Harley kind of broke out in terms of, you know, movement on the ice and things of that sort. I mean, it was kind of hard. They made it really difficult to play against them.
Well, the huge thing is that you had guys who were down and out, and you had people stepping up to do that. And the Avalanche have had a record in the last two seasons of having people not live up to the expectations that they put on them, which is why we keep trading guys and keep letting guys go. But we're keeping some guys because they're not playing up to their potential. I don't know. It's hard to argue with Cale Makar and Devon Taves as your top D pairing. And it's hard to really argue with the fact that, you know, the Avalanche up until after, you know, Anunin and Georgiev were gone, they were like one of the least scored on hockey teams for like 2 months there, like 2-3 months. And now a lot of that probably has to do with the goalie change. But I mean, the defense is big there too. I mean, you know, a goalie's not going to be completely, you know, shutting down everything. Sorry, Connor Hellebuck, you're just not that good, Chief. But defense is just, you know, for the Avalanche, I don't think they're number one. I do think they're in the top three. I see the Panthers, and especially with Gavin saying how like physicality matters and length matters, you know.
It's actually not what you said, but okay.
But I mean, I was going through what NHL.com had their top 20 defensemen. Every single one of these defensemen are puck moving defensemen or like offensive defensemen, which is fine. But like, I'm looking through this list, and the other only like people I see that have Stanley Cup wins other than the Avalanche is like you have Gustav Forsling with the Florida Panthers. You have Hedman with the Lightning, and like that's it. And honestly, like when you get to the postseason, it's all about physicality. That's what the NHL wants. They don't want power plays to be dictating series at all. They're going to send you out 5-on-5. You better get used to it. And yeah. Do the Avalanche have that? Nope.
We've seen that time and time again. I mean, look at Edmonton, like one of the best power plays, like year after year, regular season, postseason, but it dries up. Like after round two, you are getting very little calls. So it's like the power play kind of stops being a thing you can just solely rely on. Like all these like beautiful, it just kind of becomes old style hockey, like rock 'em, sock 'em, like who can hit each other more and still stay standing, really, is at that point.
And honestly, the NHL is better for it, though, because you really don't – I mean, we all see it. Like, you see it in different sports, and you see it in football, you see it in basketball, you see it in soccer. You know, you don't want the game being called because the ref has to make a potential decision because it's like, did he really go down in the penalty box, or was it not? Yeah. Did he barely touch him?
No, I agree with you. I think one of the most, like, fun Stanley Cup like final games I ever watched was when the Avs were playing Tampa, and it was when it was the game that Kadri scored that like overtime winner, like coming back from injury, like that type goal. And that whole overtime was like the way that they were just beating each other up, like scoring chances on both ends would get disrupted by some dude straight up near breaking another guy's finger by just slashing him in the hands, and the refs would just be like, keep playing. Like, that was amazing to see. And I think that's absolutely what you want to do. And like, yeah, to your point, Grant, Dallas has been great at developing guys. Like Thomas Harley, as much as he's been annoying, is such a good defenseman. Mm-hmm. Like such an amazing guy that like you can just play when like a bunch of minutes. He's not even your top guy. Like he is absolutely phenomenal. And the Avs have been missing like any sort of development since 2009. Like they have not developed anyone outside of the first round, really outside of anyone outside the top 10. And I think that that's like, obviously you see Dallas's like cup window continuing to be extended because of it. Like they were supposed to be done after Joe Pavelski and Jamie Benn got too old, but now they suddenly have Jason Robertson and Harley and Wyatt Johnston and all these guys that are now like huge parts of their core and they're all like really young. And that's something that the Avs aren't going to have. They're going to have to hard rebuild after a little while. Hopefully they win another cup, obviously, so we can kind of just be all right with it. But, it's a massive failure. And I hope when Gabe Landeskog takes over as GM, he fires every single one of his scouting staff.
I love this so much. I want to bring this to your attention, too, while we continue to start talking about Dallas. And I think Dallas is maybe a good place to kind of keep going here. Collectively, with the second pairing of Thomas Harley and Ilya Lyubushkin,
well, that's blocks, a joke.
Looking at blocks here, 246 collectively between the two of them.
Well, that's because Lyubushkin can't do anything else. That guy's useless unless you put him in front of the net to block shots.
Well, but that's what I'm saying is you've got Thomas Harley providing a little bit more of the offensive prowess in that pairing, obviously, with Lyubushkin finishing with 14 points. But I think that's just to be said, something to be said about the depth that Dallas continues to kind of carry on and move in with, especially as their cup window continues to expand. I mean, Liam Bischel isn't providing anything super, super exciting as far as, you know, block shots, 4 goals, 5 assists. With a total of average of 14.89 minutes of time on ice last season. Like, that's, you're not getting much out of that, but there's still something to be said about the fact that Liam Bischel's your kind of almost bruiser. You've got that depth. You've got a guy who, like, you know what you're getting out of them. They have their roles and they play them to a T in this system, which I think personally it makes Dallas just that much more dangerous.
Well, I agree with you there that they do have roles and that they do have, you know, the players understand their roles, but I don't think that's kind of been like translated for the Avalanche at all. I think that's a big identity crisis that they have, because I mean, Manson's supposed to be your physical guy, but I mean, I don't see Girard really. I mean, I see Parker Kelly and Colton and forwards more blocking shots than defensemen. And that's why guys like Chris Tanev are so valuable. And even guys like Mackenzie Weegar to an extent. And even, you know, Rodko Gudas was on that Florida Panthers team that won, not this past season, but the season before it. And, you know, sometimes you just need a guy to just, you know, go out there and say, hey, we're going to add it. You're going to be an extra layer of protection. And the Avalanche don't really have that. I thought that that's what they were kind of going to develop Keaton Middleton to kind of do a little bit. Except the problem is that a lot of players learn best by example. I mean, Liam Bischel had the opportunity to kind of learn from Chris Tanev right before, like when Tanev was there last year. And he got to kind of see that firsthand. And, you know, with no one kind of like showing that on the Avalanche, it's kind of hard to replicate that. Like it's difficult that way. There needs to be somebody who's someone's game does need to change, whether it's Malinsky, whether it's Taser a little bit. I think Taser's fine, but you know, for whatever reason, NHL keeps dogging him over a bunch of other defensemen, but,
yeah. I think that's kind of a perfect segue into chatting about the defensemen for the Colorado Avalanche heading into this season. We're going to kind of do a brief overview of each player, go into stats from last season and how that could potentially translate into this season, this upcoming season's expectations, potential roles that we could see these guys sliding into if things need to be shifted, what the free agency period is kind of done to shift expectations, things of that sort. And we'll start with the guy who is currently on a contract year in Cale Makar. As we've all stated, one of, if not the best defenseman in the league, if not the world. Last season, played close to a full 82 game season, stopped short at just 80, missing the last two of the season, finished with 30 goals, 62 assists for a total of 92 points, a plus 28 on the season with an average time on ice of 25 minutes and 43 seconds. Among those 30 goals, you've got 12 on the power play, a total of 35 power play points, shorthanded goals at 2, shorthanded points at 3, game-winning goals at 4. Guys, I don't know, as though coming off of a 30-goal season that there's much. I mean, obviously, all players always looking to improve. There's things I can definitely say about his performance in the postseason. But as far as regular season stats go, I'd imagine that's about as good as it gets.
Don't remember that one of those shorthanded goals was actually when we beat the Carolina Hurricanes after being down for a while. Just don't forget about that one. But so I think the big thing for Cale Makar, and especially this year, and something that Dallas kind of exposed a little bit, especially because as opposed to other people's opinions on his postseason, I actually went back and watched I actually went back and watched. Instead of kind of having the keeping guys down more, and you know, you see a lot of teams play a hybrid system where they'll do zone down low, then they'll switch up to man up high so that the forwards mark the defenseman. The Dallas Stars essentially just said, we're gonna stick a forward right next to you, Cale Makar, a little bit, and we're gonna stick a forward right next to you. And we're going to limit your abilities to chip in on offense. And then when we get the moment that we see it, we know that one of you is going to pinch down the boards. So all we're going to do is just toss that puck out. I would like to see that the Avalanche, as well as Cale Makar a little bit, he's amazing offensively. He's the absolute best offensive defenseman the game's probably ever seen in since Bobby Orr. But Bobby Orr also did play, like, they're different eras. You can't really compare them, honestly. But, The forwards and Demon need to stop kind of looking to Cale Makar to always kind of like bail things out with like a shifty move or whatnot, because teams are keying in on that. We've seen it. You don't see it a lot, but when teams do it, it kind of eliminates his ability to be effective. I don't know what they're going to have to do. I think Bednar does have something that he kind of has to realize here, but I think, again, greatest defenseman on planet Earth. There needs to be a bigger way to involve him where it's not that puck goes down low, then it's immediately cycled to him, then there's a pass to Taves or the other way, because it's getting so predictable that teams like the Dallas Stars, who play you so often and play you in the playoffs very often, have figured out how to counteract you. Gavin, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, also, one of the biggest problems that Cale Makar had in that series was something was up with his hand. Like, he had a serious hand injury during it. He had like a kind of a bandage on his hand almost the entire time. He underwent I don't know if it was surgery right after it, but he had a pretty damning hand injury the whole time, and that impacted a lot of his ability. But yeah, again, we've seen it time and time again with the Avs. Like, the biggest problem they have is it seems to be like they can't really adjust their game. Like, they just can't seem to,
like, they've got one game plan and that really doesn't change.
And I've said enough about what I think the Avalanche should do to change their game. But really, I think that the biggest thing is obviously, like, the problem I think with Cale Makar, like, I don't even think we've seen the full potential of it. I think that we're about to enter it now when he starts to enter his prime. He's about to be 27, I believe, which should make all of you feel old. he's about to be entering his like world eater stage of his career. And these are years like where MacKinnon is playing some of the best hockey of his career alongside Makar. These are the prime years for the Avalanche, and they should do everything they possibly can to take advantage of it.
Before you chime in, Bailey, I do want to say one thing. It is a contract year, and let's not forget that kind of a big reason we're all so harsh on like Nate Schuster asking $10 million is because Makar is coming up too. If the Avalanche need to sign, if they don't sign Makar, that's a big statement. But honestly, I can't believe we haven't signed him already. I cannot believe they didn't get this deal done last year, like, and extend him. Like, I'm pretty sure he could have been extended last year. So is his number really that high? I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I don't think he was eligible to sign an extension until July of this summer, if I'm not mistaken. I could be.
Yeah, but he has a no trade in, no, there's no restrictions on him though.
I honestly, in my opinion, I don't think the Avalanche are in any rush to get this done solely because I don't think there's any world in their mind or in existence to them where Cale Makar does not sign some sort of extension. I don't think
he's done the same thing about Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah, but all credit to Mikko. Mikko is not Cale Makar. You're talking about a guy who is part of your foundational core versus your franchise defenseman.
So what I remember now is like you're actually only allowed to sign the contract on his last year of the contract. So his last year is not this season. It's next season. He's still signed for all of next season.
Yeah, so that's right.
It's this summer.
That's right. That's right.
Or whatever is when he gets to when he's eligible to sign his extension.
Still though, please for the love of God, just extend him before this season starts, so we don't have to go through a bunch of fucking questions and ESPN always bring ESPN and TNT broadcasters every single time. Well, is the deal going to get signed? I don't know.
No, that's my bad. I forgot he's got one more year after
he's
this.
Going to the Flames, don't you?
No, I think Cale Makar's biggest enemy here in the next two seasons is going to be pressure. Like that is absolutely what is going to, I think, potentially be the factor that draws him from his game. I think there needs to be a conversation or some sort of, you know, coming to Jesus or whatever type of hockey god one-on-one moment where he realizes that there is talent. Like he's obviously the most talented defenseman in the league for a reason. But there does need to come a point where he is not your fallback for quite literally every single horrible situation this team could be thrown into. Cale Makar plays 25 minutes a night for a reason. There's obviously a lot of trust in him from this coaching staff. I don't think that needs to be a norm. And again, this comes into talk of, you know, assigning roles and trying to figure out how to make this a more cohesive blue line through three pairs and not just one, and throwing something out there, hoping, you know, you spark something, get something to work. Cale Makar cannot be your fallback for everything. He cannot be the make something happen man every single time you run into a situation. I think barring any injuries, that's kind of what happened to him last season, is that pressure, I think, played a decent role in maybe some of the decline that we saw in his game at certain points in the season. And once you see other guys kind of starting to step up and make those moves and you know, build that confidence a little bit and not have to fall back on the blue line so much, I think is when you really see his game shine. And that's where I'll kind of leave that, unless you guys have any other points to add in here. Moving on to Devon Taves, partner of Cale Makar, who had one of the better seasons of his career last year. 76 games played, 44 total points with 10 goals, 34 assists, plus 30 on the season with an average of 24 minutes and 35 seconds of ice time per game. Not bad on the special teams points. You've got one power play goal, three total points. Where he really shined, and I'd love to kind of point this out when we kind of talk a little bit more, he's the kind of minute man. He was the minute man last season with four game-winning goals, two overtime goals. Gavin, I'll start off with you here first. Last season was one of my favorite seasons watching Devon Taves play Colorado Avalanche hockey.
No, I absolutely agree. I think he's utterly fantastic. I mean, I love his just overall clutch factor when it comes to defense. Like there were several moments when he'll just save like a horrible defensive breakdown and you'll be like, oh my God, Devon Taves, you're the best. And really, like, you just – he's also incredibly clutch in the playoffs. Like, looking at his playoff numbers, he had 15 points in that cup-winning season, and, like, every season since, he's been awesome. He was over a point per game in that 22-23 series and against Seattle. Like, he's just been such a amazing trade by Joe Sakic when they just absolutely robbed Lou Lamoriello for him. Like, it's just been one of the best trades in all of Avalanche history, just getting him for so low. And he's been a fantastic partner for Devon Taves. I mean, it's always fun to watch.
For Devon Taves?
Yeah. He won a cup. He ain't doing that in Lou Lamorello's.
You're talking about Devon Tapes. You meant Kale McCarr.
What?
You meant Kale McCarr.
What? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My bad.
You're good.
Also, have I mentioned that Lou Lamorello's a hilarious guy? He's just a funny little guy. Yeah, but no.
He's a wee little lad.
I mean, it's just been a fantastic, like, you think about his career in general. I mean, he gets to play next to one of the best offensive defensemen in the entire history of the game, and he's just asked to be like the responsible adult, and he is, and he's just been so good next to McCarr. I mean, is there a better defensive pairing in Avalanche history other than those two? Like, obviously there's been great defensemen, like Ray Bourque has come here and won a cup. Obviously you had Adam Foote. Like, you have great defensemen, but
yes, John Michael Lyles and George LaRocque.
Oh God. No, I wholeheartedly agree. I can't think of a tandem like a tandem like this that's been so consistently played, that has also been so consistently good. Not just in Avalanche history, but just thinking back in recent years of the league, like how clutch this pairing alone has been in Devon Taves and Kale McCarr. Again, having to point out, like, this is a guy who really provided some much needed offense in times of need when you've got those, you know, tie games heading into overtime. You've got the minutes dwindling down in the third period, and almost always you can put Devon Taves out there and trust that he's going to get the job done. Grant, I'll throw it over to you.
All right, I'm going to sing his praises before. I think there is one thing that stands out to me, and it's an overall defense thing, but I always see Taves do it anyways. Taves is literally probably if Kale McCarr was not on this team, I think Devon Taves would be the number one best-selling jersey on the team, even though, you know, you have McKinnon and Landeskog, because I think Taves is just that likable. And he's just that great of a defenseman, even though he's kind of getting back. He's getting back in age. Sorry. Like you said, he's a Swiss Army knife. The Avalanche depend on him for so many things. And, you know, I mean, Kale McCarr kind of gets to shine a lot on the offensive front for a defenseman. And he always gets to play the first power play. But I mean, that second power play, Taves is the main guy that the puck goes to a lot when, you know, Girard eventually just says, here you go, Taves, here, have the puck. And that one timer is so effective when he does it. I will say the one thing, and this is an overall team thing, but I see Taves do it the most. For some reason, in the playoffs, and even some regular season games, when we're on the penalty kill, the Avalanche are on the penalty kill, I always see Taves getting beat down low with a cross crease pass. In fact, it happened like three times, all with Wyatt Johnston scoring the game winning goals in a couple of them. And I don't know if that seems like it's an overall team thing, but I always see him get kind of like caught out on it more. Now, I know this is nitpicky, but I mean, we're trying to be fair here and not be narcissistic about our defensemen. But, you know, I just it's small things like that that can kill you, though. It really is, especially when you're playing against, you know, the best of the best and the Stars and some of these other great teams. You got to be on it. And I think that's one thing that maybe I'd like to see differently from him. I can't really fault him on the second power play unit, because a lot of times it's just like, hey, whoever we have left, go out there, you know, and just try something. And also, he's got a joke of a defenseman with him in Girard. But, you know, thank you, Taves. Thanks for the $7 million. That's very gracious and good for the cap. Fuck you, Mikko Rantanen. Thank you.
All right. Moving right along. You know, guys, today's podcast would have been great for your Sam Girard rant.
This is sponsored by Samuel Girard's own athletic brand.
As much as I have, you know, my pros and cons of Sam Girard, definitely a lot more expectation-wise to look for from him this upcoming season. 73 games played. As far as points go, we're looking at 24 points on the regular season, 3 goals, 21 assists, a plus 7 with 20 minutes and 51 seconds of average ice time per game. As far as penalty or power plays go, he's got a 1 assist for the entirety of the power play last season. Something good to be said, though, here as far as game winners go. He's got 2 overtime goals. He's got 1. Certainly not his best as far as numbers go for his career as a whole. And just looking at points, going off of points, that 2022-23 year following the cup run looks to be that kind of seems to be his ceiling as of right now. But I know you guys have already given a lot of your thoughts on Sam Girard, but just talking about expectations for this upcoming season and how he can kind of build off some of the maybe good things we've seen in years past.
Yeah, he could get traded to another team. that's my full expectations for him. Because I don't want it to be here anymore. Please end my suffering. Oh my God.
All right. Before we go into another Samuel Girard rant, I do want to say something. I think if he was not a second pair defenseman, you could actually look at it a little bit better. If he was a third pair defenseman that you kind of throw out on the power play or when you kind of need to move the puck in the offensive zone, I think that'd be fine, right? That'd be okay. But it's the fact that he's playing too many minutes, and it's, you know, for a puck moving defenseman with your being second D pair for most of your career and only really having 37 points as your, like, that's your job. It's not even like you're being asked to be like this super big defensive defenseman on top of it. Like, your job is to move the puck and get assists and eventually, and sometimes score goals. And, you know, when you look around the other teams in the league and see what they're doing, I mean, Thomas Harley was a second D pair man for the Dallas Stars until he just had this previous playoffs where he was absolutely phenomenal, mm-hmm. You know, and Girard's not a prospect anymore. He doesn't have that. You don't have more years to still grow and have your game evolve. This is your job. This is what you do. And I understand defensemen aren't supposed to light up the score sheet, but if you're an offensive defenseman and you're a puck moving defenseman, and all you can really manage in a full 73 games is 21 assists, I just don't think that flies anymore as a second D pair man. I would be ecstatic with that as a third D pair guy. I think that's great. But the problem is that we signed you to $6 million. We're expecting you to play the second D pair. And we're also expecting you to be on the penalty kill. And I'm sorry to break it to you, Girard, but you're actually going to have to block the shots on the penalty kill. The forwards are doing it. And this is a little bit of a shot, too, at Cale Makar. I mean, he doesn't do a great job of blocking shots, but, you know, Girard, you got to do your role is like very small. And unless you want to kind of change this narrative that people have around you, that's not just me and Gavin. That's a lot of people on NHL Twitter, because it's talked about extensively through DNVR, Gorilla Sports, even Locked On Avalanche, because people just have a. People don't like what they're getting. You don't like what you're getting from a second pair defenseman. You either need to be Lane Hutson on the offensive side of it and be just assist after assist after assist after assist. And, you know, honestly, we can take the bad on defense as long as you're doing your job there. But you're giving us this half and half that's not working. It's not doing anything effective. You're not being effective in the games. You're just there.
And I think this brings up a great point in roles. And this is kind of like Mike's segue into moving into his usual defensive partner in Josh Manson. But I think when looking at them as a pair, you know kind of why Josh Manson's out there on the ice. He's a gritty guy who's going to kind of get on your nerves and provide a little bit of that physicality that we're maybe missing in other areas on the ice. But as far as, you know, different scenarios and situations go, you're not getting that offensive prowess from Manson that you would maybe need with seeing what Girard is bringing on that same pairing too. And it comes to like, you kind of do need somebody to step up more offensively, somebody who's going to kind of keep it, be more of a stay at home guy on that line to get that full effectiveness that you're going to get out of a defensive pairing. I think if you're playing two guys who are solely either going to play half and half, there's not really that expectation that, okay, no, this is exactly how we're going to run this. And there's, you're limiting confusion. You're establishing, you know, a set game plan, something that, you know, I like the versatility there. I like that they're maybe both able to step up in certain times of need. But in Girard's case, I really think it would benefit the Avs game plan as a whole for him to either commit one way or the other. And if the Avs can't make that work in the next season, wiping their hands. That's my kind of thought there.
Your job, especially as an undersized defenseman, is just you got to be on the team sheet every night with a point or an assist or doing something. I mean, it's just not good enough. In the past season, 24 points in 73 games is not good enough. That is just not good enough. Mm-hmm. Not in the slightest, especially if you're getting paid $6 million a year, especially when you have other teams that when I was looking up rosters, but when you have the Golden Knights and you have White Cloud on their second D pairing, if you go to the Dallas Stars, you have Thomas Harley on their second D pair. If you go to the Panthers, you have Mikkola, the one I was forgetting about earlier. You have him on your second pairing. And not to say that those guys are these great offensive defensemen, but they're certainly being better than what Girard is putting up.
I will caveat here in saying for the price point that Girard is at, absolutely expecting more should be the expectation here. But I will say Girard is not, I don't see the expectation for him being you need to at least get a point out of every night, because that's not generally what you're asking of your second pair defenseman.
Well, right. But my point is that in 73 games, 24 points is not enough, especially since you don't have a lethal, it's not like you have a lethal clapper or a lethal wrist shot for that you can fire from the point to even get points or have people tip on goal. But I mean, it's just, when I see Girard get the puck, I kind of just sigh because there's not many options for him. There's just not.
I think if we saw him at closer to somewhere in the like 32, 35 point range, I might not be as critical.
I would be.
I'd like to see him get closer to 40. If you can at least get half, get your points to half of how many games you're playing in a season, I think that's kind of my expectation for him this upcoming season, is kind of getting closer to that point, at least in helpers. I as nice as goals would be from your second pair guy, I'm not exactly expecting him to chip in on goals, at least be the playmaker that everybody's expecting you to be, especially with the size that you're providing on the ice.
No, I think so too. I mean, the problem with Girard is like, all the regular season stats, like, I don't mind it as much. I mean, he's got, you know, a couple 30 point seasons in there. Obviously, that's kind of what you want from your second pairing guy. Recently, though, like these 20 point seasons, this isn't enough for a guy that's making $5 million per year. Really, and a guy that's just getting frequently exposed on defense. But even if he was getting like 20 points, chipping in decently like on defense, if Girard was 3 inches taller, we wouldn't really have as much of an issue. But mm-hmm. The problem is he's just completely the definition. If you go to Wikipedia and you look up worthless, Sam Girard's picture is right next to it in the playoffs. That's just the truth. I mean, he doesn't provide any offense in the playoffs. And that's the difference between him and Manson. It's like Manson has a lot of the same problems as Sam Girard. He takes too many penalties. He's very lackadaisical in his own zone sometimes. He has some horrific turnovers. But at least he actually provides offense. I mean, in that, again, that cup-winning team, he had 8 points in the playoffs. I mean, he was great. He had several big moments, several clutch defensive moments as well, and you just see nothing from Sam Girard. It's very much what you see from Grant. I mean, when he was talking about, like, this half-and-half, like, gray zone where you get almost none of it, like, you don't get offense from him. You might get defense. I think Sam Girard does a lot of good things defensively, stuff that you don't really realize. Like, his skating is one of the best in the league.
A lot of it can be overshadowed, though.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. It's absolutely overshadowed by the fact that he just lets in the most goals out of any defenseman other than Ryan Lindgren in the playoffs. So all these like little like things when people come out, they're like, oh, they don't know. They don't know that Sam Girard is actually really good defensively. The goals suggest otherwise. Yep. I mean, so it just kind of gets irrelevant at the end of the day. And the thing is with Manson, like at least he has offense. And that's kind of the dilemma you're sitting at right now with your second pair, which I still don't. I agree with you, Grant. I mean, you look at everyone else's second pair, and it's better than the Avs.
I think also before we move on to Manson fully, I do want to say this real quick. Reliability is also a big thing. I mean, last season he played 73 games. That's great. The season before that, he's playing 59 games. I mean, Brent Burns is pushing 41, and in the last three seasons, he hasn't missed a game. Dude, if Brent Burns plays better than you, if Brent Burns plays better than you this season and plays more games, if you're the Avalanche, you cannot re-sign this person.
And
you can dump everything you can to Makar and Natchez if you like, because you're not gonna have to worry about paying Samuel Girard. If he gets outplayed by a 41-year-old on a 1-year contract at $1 million, you don't need him. You can find somebody else to do Samuel Girard's job just fine.
And that's the point I think I want to kind of end off and officially kind of segue into is it's a point I've mentioned in the past that most NHL teams, you're only riding on one, maybe two smaller defensemen. The Avalanche have their cap at two in both of the Sams, Girard and Malinsky. I think with the way that the market is starting to look next season, if you're not getting what you're expecting out of Sam Girard, I absolutely think it should be like I'm washing my hands clean. Let's see if we can go find somebody who has maybe more commitment and we know what we're getting every single night kind of talent. I do think Girard has talent to provide in certain areas. I think as far as the Avalanche system runs, it's become glaringly obvious that there are better fits. We can find better fits out there on the market as podcasters and, you know, like looking at around the league. But I think there's something has to kind of happen. I think this is going to be a kind of microscope season for Girard. And we talked a little bit about pressure with Cale Makar. I absolutely think pressure is either going to make or break Girard this upcoming season for the Avalanche. Moving officially, we've already kind of talked about him a little bit, into Josh Manson, who had kind of a shaky season last season, missed a decent amount of time due to a variety of different injuries spanning from December to March, if I'm remembering correctly. 48 total games played. As far as points go, not great. We're looking at 15 points, 1 goal, 14 assists, a -6 on the season with 18 minutes and 2 seconds of average ice time played. you've got one power play goal to show for everything, or power play point, not even a goal. You've got one assist to show for everything. Nothing exciting as far as, you know, game winners and overtime goes. But injuries are a little bit of a difficult situation when you look at, in the grand scheme of things, what Josh Manson was probably going through last season. I definitely am looking for him to have a higher ceiling this upcoming season. It's a little difficult with the potential unreliability as far as how injury prone he is. But I think my thing, and we'll make this brief before we move on to the last three defensemen, is I'd like to see him play at least 55, 60 games this season before I have like a proper sort of expectation as far as, you know, what I need, what I see him needing to do this upcoming season.
I think the biggest thing for Manson is that, I mean, if you look at his 23-24 campaign where he played 76 games, he had 25 points and was plus 11. With 8 goals and 17 assists, and also just being more, we need him to be physical, but we need him to be physical responsibly. I do think with only playing 48 games and a lot of those games, like he had really big stretches in between them not playing very much.
Sorry, a little chaos off screen, guys.
But I missed. No, I think it was just pure. I think a lot of it was just pure rust. And by the time he got back into the playoffs, you know, when you're expecting to be physical and play like a kind of, be like a Florida Panthers esque, you know, kind of player, and then Jamie Benn and Mason Marchment take dives the whole time. I don't really hold that over him, over his head. I know people said that those were dumb penalties, but that's what you're paying Manson to do. That's the player that you're paying him to do. It's not his fault that, you know, The refs only saw Avalanche players hitting divers and not the other way around, really. Gavin, do you?
Yeah, I think honestly the kind of the biggest issue with the physicality of other teams, like when it comes to obviously Mason Marchment, and obviously who's no longer here. Isn't he on Seattle?
Yeah, he's at Seattle now.
Yeah, he's in Seattle. He's
that parchment-licking piece of...
Can I just say, what is the point of that organization? Like, why does it exist for money laundering purposes?
It does.
I don't get why...
Where do you think all the tax money's going?
Seattle, like that team is so aggressively mid.
The logo, I think, in my opinion, is probably the best thing about
it. Is really, their jerseys are awesome.
Jerseys are tops, by the way, which is really sad because like the Avalanche have really good jerseys, but like theirs is really good too.
Theirs is good. Their arena,
they just have mediocre fans
and new, but everything else about that organization I hate. I hate their fans.
Well, how did we get here?
I hate
that. Manson. We're focused on Manson. Sorry, Manson.
Sorry. Yeah, Josh Manson's biggest problem is obviously his health.
Yeah. Like,
his biggest issue. And it's not, I want to say it's not his fault. It kind of is. Like, it's the way he plays his game. Obviously, it takes a toll on his body, and he's not getting younger. The funniest thing is, like, if he just had like a little bit more skill, he would probably be a top pairing defenseman. Like, with just how much offensive, like surprising amounts of offensive prowess he has.
Yeah. It's something that really the stat sheet does not show off.
No,
and nearly as much
off a goal, and you're like, all right,
yeah,
I'll see that again next year, I guess, because. it's one in a million. And yeah, Josh Manson, like, as much as I don't love his contract, like, he took a pay cut in a year where you have a bunch of like mid defensemen all getting like huge contracts and the cap is consistently going up. So I appreciate it. Josh Manson wants to stay. I like to see it. I love the guy. I love that, like, how much the Avs organization rallied around him when his mom sadly passed away. Like, he's got a lot of fun, and I like the guy. He's my mom's favorite player. She talks about him all the time. It's like, all right,
it's like the best compliment in the world.
It is. Like, Josh Manson's awesome, and I'm glad he's here to stay.
So I think the collective agreement here, the expectation for Josh Manson next year is
stay healthy,
focus on health. If you can get to more than 48 games next season, great.
He's so. Only allowed one hit per game.
He's been great in when he plays full seasons. It's just when he doesn't play full seasons, I mean, he just comes back rusty, and there's not much you can do with that.
Yeah, he's very brutal at coming back rusty. Like, he does it a lot, and it's always tough to see.
Just like Miles Wood.
Well, all right. Miles Wood's entire career is rusty. Have fun in Ohio, banished.
I'm from Ohio, the white boy.
Moving on to a guy who I personally think for having like a pretty much full breakout season, played really, really well for what was expected of him on the third pair. Of course, I'm talking about Sam Molinsky. As far as stats go, we're looking at 76 games played, 15 points on the board during those 76, 5 goals, 10 assists. 16 penalty minutes, not bad, not maybe great from what you want to see from your third pair guy, but not bad. One assist on the power play, nothing to really call home about as far as game winners, overtime winners go. Plus 8 in 15 minutes and 57 seconds of ice time per game.
He also had like 4 goals called back for offside.
This is true.
Unlucky.
Which is hilarious, and we're not going to dwell on this too much, but he reminds me a lot of Jack Drury in that aspect, because Jack Drury has dealt with that a lot in his career.
I mean, my God, he could have had almost as many. He could have had triple Gerard's goals from last season.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But in moving on to expectations this upcoming season, I think the sky's the limit for this kid and what we kind of saw out of him last season. Obviously, he is no Cale Makar or Devon Taves. But I do think for a guy who, you know, is not everybody's first choice for an NHL roster, at least may not have been prior to this past season, I don't think 15 points was a bad season for Sam Molinsky and what he was able to provide. You saw his game grow a lot, especially towards the end of the season, and he kind of fell into a safe rhythm. I think he kind of falls into that, a very similar boat to Gerard, in the sense of he doesn't quite know exactly what his specific role as a defenseman is. I think if he can find a little bit more consistency in what is exactly expected of him from the coaching staff, I absolutely see him getting more than 15 points this upcoming season. Gavin, we'll start off with you.
Yeah, I think his target, like, absolute floor should be 20 points, like, minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like, he had a really good beginning of the season during the dark times with Eustace Annanen and Alexander Fourgiev. and then he disappeared for the entire middle of the season. Like, he was a black hole offensively, wasn't very good. And it kind of sucked to see. And then he kind of showed up again during the end of the season, was just this great contribution, like, had a lot of this just clutch offense that he would provide. He's got a hell of a shot. And has good offensive prowess. I think that he learned a lot and will learn a lot, hopefully, next to Brent Burns, because a lot of what they do is very similar with Cale Makar and Brent Burns. Like, a lot of what makes them good is their shiftiness, is the couple steps they take before they receive the puck, and the very immediate couple steps they take after has a lot of impact on how they fool, like, incoming defenders or forecheckers. And I think it's something that when Sam Molinsky does well, like, when he actually moves his feet, he's like a, like, diet zero sugar Cale Makar, basically. it's kind of in that way.
Diet zero sugar, you know.
Sugar free, soda free. I don't
know. He's a sugar free Cale Makar.
Sugar free Cale Makar.
Oh my god. Anyway, Grant, anything to add here?
This is your year. This is your year to lock up second D pair setting and kick Girard out. There's nothing really else that needs to be said there. It's either one of two things. You get traded in the middle of the season because you're not performing up to what the Avalanche needs you to, or it's you become the new guy and Girard's gone by the end of the season. And you're the new guy on the second pair. I mean, really, that's all that needs. I mean, I've said my Sam Alinsky piece a couple times, but at the end of the day, that's just what it boils down to. Their second D pair is there for you. It's there for you to take that next step. It's the only thing limiting you is what you do on the ice. And if you're kind of paired with Keaton Middleton, that kind of sucks a little bit because they're still trying to figure out what they're going to do with him. But you're most likely going to be with Brent Burns or Josh Manson, an NHL caliber defenseman. Not saying Keaton Middleton can't get there. They're still trying to figure out what they're going to do with him.
Right. And I want to leave Keaton Middleton for last for that reason solely.
What about Brent Burns?
Into Brent Burns. Be patient. I'm getting there just because there's the expectation. Holy crap. I'm scrolling through his NHL list. I had to give two full scrolls to get down to his most recent season with the Hurricanes. That's crazy. I forgot that he entered the league or made his debut in 2003. For context, he played 36 games that season. I was 2 years old.
He was also a forward when he entered the NHL.
Forward at that point.
You want to know what's even better? I was born in September of 2002, and that would have been October of 03 is when he started. So I wasn't even a year old when he started playing hockey.
Oh my god. That's insane. And I don't know if he started the season.
No, you would have been a year old.
I'd have to do more research on that just because he played 36 games that season. I'm wondering when exactly that fell. So you could have been one, perhaps. But that's not the relevant season that we're talking about. We are talking about the 2024-25 season with the Carolina Hurricanes most recently. I want to highlight this before getting into his last season stats. For the past four seasons, he has played a full 82 game season. Obviously, his Iron Man streak is still going proud and strong. Looking at last season specifically, we're looking at 29 points, 6 goals, 23 assists, plus 7 with 20 minutes and 57 seconds of ice time per game next to Jacob Slavin. You were looking at 28 penalty minutes on the season, a historically bad power play special teams performance from him, or at least on the power play last season. 0 goals, but 3 assists to provide. And nothing super exciting as far as being a minute man in the minutes that matter most. Say that 5 times fast. We're expecting Brent Burns to, at least in my opinion, play on that third pair with Sam Alinsky. That's
probably be second pair for when Manson gets injured.
That's what I would imagine. I think Bednar puts a lot of trust in Malinsky though too, so I could see him potentially making that step up if Brent Burns kind of establishes himself as a third pair guy. But I think for, again, Grant, as you mentioned, pushing 41 years old, obviously Burns in his media availability said he still thinks he has a lot to provide. As far as what you think that is, I'll pass the microphone to you.
Consistency and reliability, that's what he provides, and that's what the Avalanche need. Please just do your job, do it well. All we need you to do is really be on the second power play. I hope to God he is, and so I don't have to see Girard do that stupid little moving down the left side, that pivot go back up to Taves that's completely readable by everybody on planet Earth. He's a journeyman just like Corey Perry. I think nowadays, especially having gone from the Wild to San Jose to Carolina, he understands that, you know, he's going to be put into it. Hopefully they find a role for him and they find what they want to do with him. Maybe kind of giving Sam Molinsky a little bit of a figurehead to look up to, and a little bit of on-site training, or not on-site training, but like on-site, you know, practice and repetition, learning from an old vet.
He's a mentor.
Yeah. And, you know, putting in good season, because honestly, I mean, going through his last three seasons in Carolina, you know, they're not going to, they, I mean, except for, you know, his first season in Carolina where he had 61 points, that's amazing, but we're not, I mean, we're not really looking that for that from you. We just want you to be the same guy you were in Carolina, have a better, have a plus in the plus minus category, be able to eat up minutes that we need you to, such as 20, and just be, you know, be that reliable guy that we still need to develop. Guys like maybe Keaton Middleton, if he ever gets to that point, and other guys too. So,
you know, I think as far as size goes, before I pass it on to you, Gavin, looking at 6'5", registered for Brent Burns, Keaton Middleton coming in at 6'6". I think if Keaton Middleton's looking at becoming any sort of, you know, if there's anybody to look up to, as far as, you know, playing a defensive game, Brent Burns is probably one of the best guys to be that mentor.
Possibly. Possibly.
Gavin, anything to add on the Brent Burns front?
I like him. He's really good. I think obviously is like a, is he two-time or one-time Norris?
One-time.
One-time Norris Trophy winner. I think like underrated impact. I mean, obviously his leadership, he's been around the game for a long time. I think he's one of the longest running NHL players in the entire history, like most, almost like third in most games played ever. And like you were saying, I think he's going to be a great mentor, especially to a guy like Sam Molinsky. I think he's also just going to be a good presence to have in the locker room in general. The pirate captain himself just chilling in the locker room whenever you need to blow off some steam. I love it. Also add in just that he's kind of a motivation in the playoffs for the Avs. We saw it with Ray Bourque. It's kind of like win it for the old guy that's never won a cup in his entire career. I mean, hey, I would love the parallel with Joe Sakic handing the cup off to Ray Bourque. Maybe a little bit of that going on with Brett Burns.
Absolutely. With that, we'll move on to the final guy on our list before we close things off. This ended up being a little longer than I planned. I don't mind it. Keaton Middleton. He, before this recent season with the Avalanche, he played three games in the 2020-2021 season, has not played an NHL game since until this most recent season. He was able to step up and earn himself about midway towards the season a permanent spot on this roster. 41 games played, a total of 2 assists and 2 points in that run. He stayed neutral in the plus minus with a total or an average of 11 minutes and 29 seconds per game. That's kind of where his stats end for his thing on NHL.com. I think he was shirked a couple of times. He wanted that first goal in the NHL so badly. And I remember, I wish I could remember which game it was. And I'm pretty sure Cale Makar, I'm pretty sure Cale Makar earned a deflection off of one of his shots. It could have been somebody else. I don't know why Cale Makar comes to mind. But he took a shot from the blue line. Somebody else deflected it, and he celebrated like he got that goal, and it was eventually given to somebody else, and I was so upset for him. But he is not somebody we're expecting to score a lot of goals for the Colorado Avalanche. He is a guy who we're hoping he can run people into walls, create some offense by creating physicality. Gavin, throw it over to you.
I mean, honestly, Keaton Middleton isn't my favorite. I think the most like comfortable I am with him is when he's not playing in the lineup. I like him as an eighth and ninth defenseman. I love him in the team photos. when like they all take it and he's like this gigantic dude.
Yep.
I remember my dad and I went to go see an Avs game and I saw Keaton Middleton skating around. I was like, I might not like the guy, but I would never say that to his face because, oh my goodness gracious, that guy is a giant.
When Grant and I went to training camp before last season, that was the one guy that he pointed out to me and was like, who is that mountain of a man skating out there? I have no clue who that is. And I had to point out, I'm like, yeah, Keaton Middleton, biggest guy on the ice. It will remain the biggest guy on the ice. I mean, not many people or even skaters come in at 6 foot six, and that's without the skates. So, Grant.
Keaton Middleton. It's kind of hard to go where – kind of hard to go a place with this one.
It doesn't have to be super profound.
Well, actually, here, hold on. Let me posture here for about 10 seconds. Yeah, no, Keaton Middleton. I just like to see him more developed. Honestly, I think that's the best that you can do with him. I mean, he's a 27-year-old that you're kind of taking a chance on, that you're still kind of keeping around because you do want that kind of physical guy. I think there is a spot for him, if possible. Something needs to happen with him developmentally, that he needs to move into a situation where maybe he's like a Radko Gudas, where he's just going to throw a monster hit, or like if you're like Jacob Trouba, you're just going to be the guy who just hits everybody, or if you're going to more evolve into this more defensive defenseman where you're going to be Chris Tanev and you're just going to block everything, you're going to be really responsible defensively, which is something that the Avalanche could need. I think it just all comes down to how they develop him. That's really it.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think development's been one of the like points of contention for me specifically over the last few years with the Colorado Avalanche. But that's a conversation for another time. That kind of rounds out our coverage of the blue line as a whole to kind of finish this off.
We gave you an hour, people. Be happy with that.
With the Avalanche finishing first on that list, I will officially pose the question. Do you guys agree or disagree?
No.
I do not, no.
No. I'm imagining we're all on the same page and saying Florida should probably be in that top spot.
Agreed. But it can get there. It can. If people play up to their ability and people play up to the standard that we expect for them, we can be the number one defensive team. We're just not right now. This last season has shown us that we're not.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that said, that'll do it for today's episode of the Avalanche Warning. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for the sneeze. Grant, we'll start off with you. Where can people find you outside of the podcast?
You can find me on Twitter. It's not X. Take a hike. At Grant_Foster_15. I'm just a guy.
He works.
Just a guy.
He doesn't post very often, but he works.
Just a guy, you know. Just a guy like all of you.
Gavin, where can people find you and your extracurriculars?
You can find me over at Avalanche Digest. We are a YouTube channel that covers the Avs, give you the hottest gossip, the news, general discussion topics with this very fun offseason that has a lot of things going on in it. and yeah, just find us over there. We're fun guys. We just talk about a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. Before I get into my kind of spiel, be sure to go follow the Hockey Podcast Network. The reason we are able to do this podcast we love so much and are able to talk about this team that we have lots of feelings about. Be sure to go check out the Hockey Podcast Network over on X at HockeyPodNet. They've got a show for everybody, guys. So if you're looking for Avalanche content or maybe not Avalanche content, you will find a show for every single NHL team over there. Even if you're looking for, you know, general league content or some fun, silly stuff, they have a show with some of the cast of Shoresy over there. So really fun time. They've got a show for everybody. Be sure to go check that out there. As far as I go, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. You can find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. If it has not become clear in the last couple of episodes, I am the resident Colorado beat writer for the Hockey News. On the ground for you guys with this team during the season, be sure to head over to the Hockey News website, find the Colorado Avalanche section. Be sure to join the group so you can stay up to date on all of the updates and news regarding the Colorado Avalanche. That's where you will find all of my articles and things of the sort there. But with that said, like I said, that's going to do it for today's episode. We will see you guys next time here at the Avalanche Warning.